Episode 17, The Most Awesomest Games of All. Join us at the table where we talk board games to miniatures and everything in between. The Games We Play with Brian and Chris.
Hey! And welcome back to episode 17, The Most Awesomest Games of All. Right now. And I am Brian.
This year.
Yeah, this year. I guarantee it'll change by next year.
Oh, most likely.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Chris.
And welcome back. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. So excited about this week. We're talking about our favorite games of all time. Again, as of right now. Because I guarantee there's a bunch of games behind me that I really want to play that I just... Yeah, it's probably gonna be knock one of these out.
There is. You've got the same problem as I do. I've got games on my shelf still in the shrink wrap I haven't played yet.
Yeah.
Gotta get to them.
It happens.
They may knock some of these off the list and get on there for next year.
For sure. Yeah. Like there's a couple games on my list. You're like, ooh, I want to play them. I'm like, I know you would love this game, but we just need to play it. And I think it would jump to like higher on your list. Or on your list, should I say.
Yes.
So anyway, we got that. We're going to talk about what's on our table, what we played this week, a couple, few games we've actually played this week, and then Love and Hate. We'll finish out the episode.
Always.
So it should be a lot of fun. A few things I want to, before we get into what's on our table. So last week, Chris, I talked about a little bit, that was actually not last week, it was the week before that, should I say, much I hated Twitter.
Yes.
About the stuff. And I was just kind of talking about how, you know, I don't want to be political or whatsoever, which we're not this podcast, but just talking about how gaming in general, the gaming space, how we shouldn't be political and stuff. I just want to clarify that just a little bit because I think maybe there's different interpretations of what being political is.
Oh, I could see that.
And so, you know, I kind of think of it like this, that, you know, you go to work, especially in the corporate environment, this is so prevalent, is that the expectation is everybody treats everybody with respect, right?
Right.
No, you know, we don't harass. We don't treat people differently. I mean,
don't
discriminate,
hostile
you know, hostile. And so I guess I take that approach a little bit with gaming when I say no politics, because hey, at work, talking politics and religion, those are topics you don't even touch at work, right? And you shouldn't be touching at work. And that was kind of my point. With not getting political in the game space, is it just treat it like that? Let's just not talk about it, because I don't think it's a, at least to me, it's not a political statement to say we should be nice to each other, that we should be cordial with each other, and that the expectation is you come to a game up to the table, whoever is you're playing with, it doesn't matter. There should be a level of expectation is that you don't get harassed, you're not treated differently. And it's just a good, friendly, open, happy environment. Because that's what gaming is about, right? It's about playing games and socializing and learning about each
other.
And just having a good time. And that, I guess that's what I was meaning about not getting political. And I can understand some of the implications that maybe political is more talking, you know, in the realm of like gender or what have you. But I just think that should just be a standard, right? That should just be the ground that we treat. Doesn't matter your gender, doesn't matter your race, religion, background, nationality, doesn't matter. All that should not even come into play. And that should just be the baseline that doesn't matter what you are, who you are, you're welcome at my table. You know, you're welcome at your table. You can come play with Chris and I, and you're not going to feel awkward. You're not going to feel harassed. And that's how it should be, you know? The reason I was kind of talking about this is we talked to Joe at the Delt Hand a little bit, and we were talking a little bit about it, and I could see how he interpreted it. And I was talking to my wife a little bit afterwards about it, and I was just like, you know, like, would you feel comfortable with this situation of going to, like a game store, right? No, not to pick on local game stores, but there's definitely a different environment, right? And she's like, no, I wouldn't be comfortable there because that's not like that environment. It's not inviting to her, right? It might be for us. Even then, I would still feel weird there. But like the Delt Hand we went to, there was tons of different people there. And everybody was having a good time. Everybody felt comfortable. Everybody was walking. And people were talking. People were sitting down with each other that didn't even know each other and playing games. It was really cool. And that's what it should be about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so when I guess just to wrap it up, what I meant by not being political is we don't need to be talking about the next election or the last election or what have you. Let's just play games and accept each other and have some fun, right? Just enjoy each other's company and
talk about which games are good and which games aren't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, there's no place for being a jerk to anybody or harassing. And I was just looking. I was looking on Twitter, and some
gotta get off there, Brian.
And there, yeah. Well, there was a female content creator that posted like a snapshot of email she got, and she. I guess I think overall, maybe I'm just naive to it, to be completely honest, because she. From it, she was getting harassed just because she's female, which is
that's
dumb.
Uncalled for.
Yeah, and that's my point, is that's almost taken political to say that's not okay, but that it isn't political. That should be expected.
That's the stuff you learn in kindergarten.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Actually, when I took picked up Denver from kindergarten today, on the sidewalk it said, be nice, be happy, and be I think, I don't remember what it said, and learn or something like that. I'm like...
Exactly.
So anyway, that's going to be like the last time I really talk about this, because, you know, we have games to talk about.
Absolutely.
So I just want to make sure everybody understand. I think everybody would be in complete agreement. I just want to make sure I wasn't misunderstood or people took it the wrong way. So all right, so let's go ahead and move on. We got a lot of games to talk about. Let's move on to what's on your table. All right, on this week's What's On Your Table. Chris, what's been on your table this week?
Sure. Brian and I, Jamie and Emily, went out to the Fire Trucker Brewery out in Ankeny this last weekend, and the Delt Hand was there. Awesome. Joe was great.
Shout out to Joe.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, did you see on Instagram he got his new van?
Oh, no. He was talking about that.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Good job.
Yeah, it looks awesome. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. No. So we helped him bring in the games and set up and stuff and just chatted with him and things. And so we pulled out a first game and first time for me playing it.
Yeah,
and,
same here. Yeah. I think for all of us. Yeah.
Yes. Quacks of Quinlanburg.
The Quacks.
Quacks of Quinlanburg. A really cool game. A very nice family title. Gateway game, I'd call it. 2 to 4 players. We played it 4 players. It's where you're basically a quack apothecary and making a potion.
You are a quack. Yeah,
just, it's a quack. I mean, when I first heard it, I thought it was like ducks and stuff. Yeah. I was like, what the heck? No, but you're a...
Like apothecary quack.
Yeah,
you're
an apothecary quack that don't know what you're doing, and you're making a big potion, and you're taking a bunch of ingredients and throwing it in. So what it is you have some standard chits of ingredients that go into a bag, and every player is simultaneously pulling out chits and putting them on their potion tableau board.
It's actually like a big cauldron.
It is, like a cauldron.
Like a
swirling
cauldron.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty cool. There's some starting points, and you add these chits to it, and basically it's a pressure luck mechanism.
Yep.
And the more chits you get out and points you move around the cauldron, you get victory points, and you get other
like
buy-in
rubies
points. Yeah,
and
rubies that do some special abilities, yep. and currency to buy more ingredients and stuff. It's a really cool game.
It is really neat.
Yeah, I didn't know much about it whatsoever until sitting down, and Joe did a great job of explaining and you know, showing how it. How it works and the steps and stuff, and we played it, had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And it's very approachable. Like it's an easy game, but it's like one of those games that it's easy, like rules to understand how to play it.
Right.
But it's going to change over time, because the ingredients that you can buy and that you keep adding to your pool and your bag,
right?
They all have special like abilities.
Yes.
But it looked like there were like 6 or 7 more in the box from what we played, and each one of those are 2-sided. So I think it changes up like the cost and some of the powers and stuff that we didn't play with out of the box. But it looks like some variability, so every time you play, it's a little different, which is neat. There's you liked, well, maybe didn't like, well, you still won the catch-up mechanic.
Yeah. So there was the first thing about it, the very first thing, when I just started listening to the rules and how it goes, it sounded like a multiplayer solitary game, basically, because there's minimal player interactions. And actually, thinking about it afterwards, there's more than my first feeling of it, and because I was turned off on that. I don't like games where the 4 of us are playing and there's no interaction and there's no... I mean, they don't have to have gotchas or anything like that,
sure,
or conflict as much, but the interaction. And so I'm turned off on those where we all play our own game, and then at the end, whoever has highest points. Well, in this, there's there's certain chits you when you pull out that if they interact with the players around you, if you have more of them, you get more victory points. So there's different strategies of being like, yeah. So there is some interactions, and the way we did it, we stepped it through and did the scorings all together. So it wasn't like I was playing my own game and you were playing your own game. We came together, scored it, did the points, and then at the end with you had to do the final round where you had to make sure that, you know, everybody was taken at the same time, because there's that pressure luck of going out and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's in the fact of that helped me really enjoy it more, because mm-hmm. there was I play games to play with people, not by myself next to somebody. So yeah. So I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed it. And they had, like you mentioned, that the catch-up mechanic. And some of those games that have these catch-up mechanics, when people are really doing well, and especially in tactical or strategic-type games, if I'm doing awesome in this kind of stuff, then all of a sudden somebody gets victory points or whatever to catch them up, to keep them in the game. I get turned off. But this one I can understand, because it's a pressure lock.
Yes.
And
oh, man.
It's very random.
Luck,
it's random. So I understand that in this. When I was first, I'm like, oh, what's this catch-up mechanic? Because I was drawing very well. And, of course, there's no strategy in that. It's just blind draw.
You were drawing extremely well the whole game.
Yeah.
So
never busted.
The catch-up mechanic we're talking about, well, let's step back. When you're placing, when you draw chit out at a time, which are their ingredients, you place it in the middle of your portal. In your cauldron, and it like spirals out, so it progresses. And the more you progress, the further you get without busting.
Yeah, and the better benefits. And
you get more
points.
Victory points, more buying power, that kind of stuff. Yep. Well, Chris was like, he kept getting up to like 18, 19, 20, and the catch-up mechanic is on the scoreboard. There's these rats, like every two or three victory point spots. And for every rat there is on the trail, we get to start at a bonus point further along the progression of the spiral. So there was times where we're like three or four ahead of you, and you were still beating us to the end. You were just, oh man. But yeah, it's fun. The different mechanics about how you can skip different spots, because each one of the tokens have numbers and depends how far you progress it. And so Chris was getting really big buy power earlier, and then you're getting really high numbers, which then
the strategy I was going with getting those chits and the ingredients I took, where I was going spending my points on them, I was getting these high numbers so that when I pull them out, they'd progress and they'd have these special abilities where I'd be able to pull back the bad chits ingredients from my board and throw them back in there. Yeah, it was really cool. So I was pulling them out at the right time, just luck. I enjoyed it.
It really did.
It's a very good gateway game to get people
in. It is
in,
a good gateway
and I
game.
Thought it was. And it was, I mean, there's enough luck and pressure type luck in it that makes it, oh, Ed, do I pull this one last chit? I'm very close. I'm at six, and if I get seven of these ingredients, I forget what they're called, cherry blossoms or something.
Those are the white cherry blossoms.
Yeah, if you get seven. If you get more than seven, you bust. So if you know there's certain number of chits, one and twos and threes in your bag that you start off with your base ingredients. So yeah, so it's when you get to that, and you're like, oh, this kind of stuff. So yeah, that's the fun aspect of that. But then, you know, really, it isn't that hard of a game to understand. And both Jamie and Emily picked it up very well, and they liked it, and we all had fun. And
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. So new gamers and experienced gamers, it's a very good game.
And there's
for
an expansion that just came out, I believe.
Yes.
It was the 2018 Kenner Spiel des Jahres winner, I believe.
Which is the best family game in Germany.
Is that?
Yep. Kenner's family game. Yep.
Future Brian here. Just want to set the record straight that Kennerspiel actually recognizes the best connoisseur or expert game of the year. Fun fact that Kenner could actually be translated from German to English as connoisseur or expert. Thus why it's called Kennerspiel des Jahres. I think what Chris was thinking of was the Kinderspiel des Jahres. Kinderspiel des Jahres is awarded every year to the best children's game. The award is to children's game what the Spiel des Jahres is to family games. Another fun fact, in 2011 they actually created the Kinderspiel des Jahres to award better expert or connoisseur games. I wouldn't say maybe expert, because some of the games that have won is like Seven Wonders and the Exit games, which are really, really good games, but those are more like connoisseur or hobby games. So just want to set the record straight, remind you that Chris is wrong and I was right. You could tell on that clip that I was a little hesitant because I didn't think he was right. And also, excuse my voice, just got back from a football game yesterday, and was just yelling a little bit. So, all right, I'll take you back. Thanks for listening to me.
So that's a very good game, and that's a very popular game in Europe, and it's popular here now.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yep,
it was a good time. Yeah, I've heard of it. I saw it on Instagram a lot. I'm like, I keep hearing about the Quacks,
right?
Quindler,
yeah, so have I lately.
It was a really interesting name. It right. sticks with you, and I'm like, let's play that. It was like a 30 to 45 minute game.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, it really is.
Let's do it. So yeah. I'm glad we did. That was a good very game. Much. What's on my table is Forbidden Sky. So if you don't know or if you haven't played, there's a series of Forbidden games. Now, they're not like tied together per se, but they have the same kind of theme. And,
right.
and what it is it's a cooperative game. And the idea is you're trying to escape from somewhere. So the first one was Forbidden Desert. You as a group are just trying to escape from the, did I say Forbidden Desert? Forbidden Island. You
this
and your
the first one.
You and the group is trying to escape from the island.
Yep.
The second game is Forbidden Desert. You're trying to like uncover. I've never played the first one, but I played the
I've
second
got
one.
The first one. Love it.
The second one, you're trying to uncover like a spacecraft, an archaeologist, and you're trying to dig through the desert and the sand because the sand will start stacking up. It's actually really fun.
Oh.
Yeah, there's like desert and then there's wind and their eye of the storm moves and it picks up and adds dump sand. You can get like trapped. And anyway, it's really fun. So you're trying to uncover pieces of the ship, and there's actually a 3D ship and there's plastic pieces. You can put them together, and so once you do it, then you take off as a group. Otherwise, there's like 18 like four ways to die, but like it feels like 18 ways to die, that kind of game, but one way to succeed. Well, the third game, again, cooperative game, it is Forbidden Sky. What's really cool about this is there's the win the game, you have to escape on a rocket ship.
Cool.
Well, a neat thing is the rocket ship is powered, and the beat the game or the win the game is you're setting up these tiles, which is like a platform up in the sky. And there's actual like conductors, like small, large conductors and lightning rods, and you're connecting wires to them. And so under these wires, there's metal, and you have to create a circuit from the landing pad. So the landing pad has two sides to it, a positive and negative side. And the rocket ship goes in there, and there's like metal connectors on the bottom of the fins of the rocket ship. For the positive and negative, you combine the circuit, then the ship lights up and like makes like a taking off noise. And so the whole game is
that's cool.
Yeah, you're trying to build these tiles and you have to put these conductors down. You're putting wires down and you have to connect a full circuit from one side to the other. And there's a blueprint, and depending on this is where the difficulty level comes in. Like the other games, there's difficulty scales. There's a blueprint saying, well, you have to do like we did normal. You had to do like two large conductors because those are really hard to do. Three small conductors a little easier because the large conductors takes four square tiles.
Mm-hmm.
The small conductor take two small tiles, and then you had to do three lightning rods. So throughout the deck, after you play your actions, you always get four actions. At the end, you always draw cards. And this is the same with Forbidden Desert. I believe the same with Forbidden Island, where there's a deck that you play and bad stuff usually happen, right? And the bad stuff on this is like lightning strikes because you're up in the sky and there's a storm. So the lightning will strike all the lightning rods, and the lightning rods will then send electricity down the wires that are connected to that tile. Well, you have to build all these wires that connect it up, and you have to go through the electrical. Well, if you happen to be on a tile that's connected to the wires, you get electrocuted, and you only have so much life. Yeah, but there's like special little things you can build to protect yourself, just like the other games. There's things and special abilities and stuff. And then there's high winds. You can get blown off the platform. So you have a rope. So on your card, you have a rope counter that you're going and a health counter. If anybody ever loses or dies from your group, everybody loses. So it's really hard. And there's like six of those lightning strikes and multiple of those wind ones on the deck before you cycle through it again. It's so hard.
Oh, wow. We got to play that.
It is a lot of fun, though. I this whole circuit thing, too, it's not a gimme. You have to like plan out where are we going to put it, because the wires that you connect them, there's only two sizes, long and short, and you have to connect them. And so you have to plan out where you're going to put these and be you know, strategized, while at the same time you're having to worry about lightning strikes and getting blown off, and everybody has variable
OSHA yelling at you.
No kidding. And then everybody has variable powers, just like in the other games. So there's Emily was the electrician; she could place wires for free, which was huge.
Oh yeah,
because one of your actions is placing a wire. Well, you place a wire there, you're connecting electricity basically to your square. If you happen to have a power, like a lightning rod anywhere on there, now you're like stuck on the tile. And so she basically would move, place the wires, move off of it, and so she'd be protected. But yeah, a lot of strategy.
Nice.
And different variable powers. There's a medic and a person who can fix ropes. I was a person where one of the actions is you get to scout ahead, so you get so many tiles, and so you can build those tiles as another action. So normally you can only have three tiles in front of you to be able to play. I get four, and I can trade tiles to other people, which is a good ability. So anyway, it's a really fun game. It's lighter. Definitely tension and stress. And you can't just not think ahead and strategize, being like, well, we know we have a couple wind cards coming out. We need to make sure there's spaces to the right because the wind's blowing that way, or down or north or south or west, because the wind shifts too. And so there's a lot of looking ahead, because if you don't do it, you're gonna die. And there's a couple times I'm like, I'm so grateful we decided to move there, because we would have died or ended. That happened so many times at the end of the game that if we hadn't moved before we ended the turn, we would have died. So
cool,
really fun. And there was advanced and expert legendary difficulties above for where we were. Yeah, so there's way more difficulties than what we just played. We just played normal because we had played the other one. So anyway, Forbidden Sky, that just came out last year. I picked that up. Highly recommend it. I think I like this the most of the three. Well, I guess I haven't played the first one.
I have the first one. I played that several times.
I've heard about it. Yep. I've heard Desert is better than the first one, because Desert's a little more, adds more stuff to it, and I really like the sand building up, but the third one's better than the second one, if you ask me. And it has building a
pretty
circuit.
Cool. I know.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So anyway, I could talk about it for a while, but we did get that to the table, and it was a lot of fun. Check it out if you get a chance. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. It is our top prime seven games of all time.
Plus one.
We could have narrowed down.
Oh, my gosh. So we came up with these rules with the whole prime bits, and have to be, we have to own them, and we have to play them.
And nine is not a prime number.
We made fun of that.
Details.
We made fun of that. So I just rolled with it.
Thanks, Corey. Matter of factly, I think it was Monday morning at like, it was, I just logged in, and like 2 minutes, I get an internal instant message, and the company's like, you know, nine's not a prime number. I'm like, of course it isn't.
Yeah, no, we just roll with it. That's what I told Corey. I said, I just rolled with it, go with it. We can laugh later.
Oh, good time. Can
always edit that out if we need to, but no, he didn't.
So we're going to call this Prime Plus One.
Yes, Prime Plus One.
AKA 8.
Yes.
So we're going to do our first of your 8 games. Yep. Again, the kind of rules here is games we played, games we like, and of course it's right now. And in context of 2019, today is Wednesday, August 28th. Yep. So just for future reference, next August we'll record this again.
Yes.
Hopefully, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. Hopefully, there'll be some more games on there. There's more games. That means we played some good ones.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, one of the caveats is that we own these games. It's not games we played somewhere. We planned it. Yeah, we own
them. I might have fudged one of them.
Well, don't tell. It's on both of us. It's we both own them.
Sure. Yes, yeah, that's like, true.
That's true. It's
that's
the games
true.
We, as in Brian and I, own. So it could be on your shelf, could be
and
on my
Corey
shelf.
Corey owns one of these too. So.
Yeah, well, Corey owns several of these, but.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go ahead and you want to go ahead and get into it?
Yes, let's do.
All right, number 8. Let's do it.
Number 8 is, for me, Fire and Axe, A Viking Saga. It's a game back from 2004. I love this game. One of the first Viking games I actually got. Basically, what you're doing, you're a Viking clan. You got a map board. You got ships. You got Viking.
Vikings.
Vikings. You got Vikings. And
are there miniatures?
Yeah, there's some miniatures. There's miniature ships. Yeah.
Thank you, Corey.
Yep. There's. You'll notice there's several games of mine on this list have miniatures. Might be a common theme, you'll see.
Maybe.
But no, this is a very fun game. basically your Vikings and you're competing against other Viking clans as you travel around this map and world to plunder and to pillage and to just do Viking things, what Vikings do. And it's a really cool game. Loved it.
Is it like dudes on the map kind of deal?
Yeah, there are. But it's not like lots and lots and lots of dudes on a map as some of these other games are.
Sure.
But there's dudes on a map, and it's a good sized board. And like I said, it's been out 15 years, and they've reprinted it here a few years ago. They changed the art on the box and stuff. I have the first one from back in 2004. And just really like this game. Lot to it. There's different ways to go about getting your victory points and your victory conditions. There's different paths you can go around and areas you can, you know, control and go about different ways to get that. And,
oh, that's you know, make nice. It I like Valhalla. That.
Yeah, it is. I like that too. But very fun game, Fire and Axe, A Viking Saga.
You know, when that came out, I was graduating from high school.
Oh, let's just say I had my third kid by then.
That's a new segment. Don't you feel old? Yeah. I'll just cut that out.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
You're welcome. All right, number eight for me is Lords of Vegas. Lords of Vegas, I think we've talked on this podcast. We haven't like reviewed it. I think I just mentioned it maybe like What's on Your Table or something. But for those who don't know or haven't heard that, Lords of Vegas is an older game. Actually, it's by Mayfair Games, which they're not around anymore. And that tells you. I don't know if this has like been picked up or reprinted, so this might not even be in print. I apologize if it is, but Lords of Vegas is a fun little game where the board is Las Vegas, like the main strip of Las Vegas, and all of the open buildings or spots along the strip are open. And so the idea here is that you get to build casinos on the Las Vegas Strip and try to make the most money, aka victory points.
Yeah,
Vegas. So, I mean, this still seems pretty generic, but what I really like about it is that when you place the buildings, you put you have tons of these small dice, right?
Yep, a lot of dice in this game.
And the buildings are these cardboard squares with a hole in the middle where your dice fits in perfect. And so you're building and expanding these casinos and putting your dice in there. And the board tells you what the default dice is. And obviously some spots are more expensive, like right up against the the main drag, opposed to the other ones in the corner. And what's going to happen is, as the game progresses, people are getting in on these casinos because there's different colors of casinos.
Yep.
And every time somebody plays, a card comes out, and that's what casino scores, basically. It's basically a color of the casinos, like silver or gold or whatever. And you want to be the boss of that casino. And the boss is the person in that contiguous casino of the same color that has the highest die number. And so you and I could be playing, and you could have five dice in there, but if they're all like 1, 2, 3, and I had a 6, and I just had 1, I'm the boss of the casino. I get the victory points from it scoring. Now, you get some money, and I get some money too, which is helpful, but I'm the boss. Well, some of the actions is you could try to overthrow the boss, and so everybody picks their dice up from the casino and chuck your dice and see who it is, because whatever you roll is what the new value of the casino. And in the game, they allow like partnerships and trades, and like you'd be like, we could all collude. So if we're all in one big casino and Chris is in control, be like, okay, I'll pitch in $5 million. You pitch in $5 million. You pitch in $5 million to pay for the reroll. And you can do that. It's perfectly legal in the game. And it leads to
Vegas. Come on.
Yeah. At the end of the game, it just leads to some hilarious situation where everybody's rolling, we're all rolling like 6, 7 dice to try to see who can control this casino. And oh, man, it's some of the most fun I've ever had playing a game, and some of the loudest, like, moments and jumping up and chairs falling down because you're getting up so quick. And, oh, man, it's a favorite. It was a game that Corey and his brother introduced. It's one of their favorites that they play in their family every year at holidays, and I really love the game, too. So
very fun. It also has a nice expansion called Level Up.
Yep, I got it on my shelf.
Yes, so do I. I have both of those, too, as well. Very good game.
Yeah, so that was Lords of Vegas, my number 8.
Number 7. My number 7 is actually on Brian's list, and it's down on his a little further, so we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
All right, number 7 for me is Betrayal at the House on the Hill.
A good game.
Which is kind of funny, because I just played this
So did we.
Earlier in the month, or early in the year for the first time I've ever played that. Remember, like for people who are listening to Origins, that was the first time playing it.
I forgot about that.
It jumped to my top 10 list instantly.
Made that big of an impression.
Yeah. It is a good game. You're going to see a trend here on my list because these games where it's kind of off the wall a little bit and there's a gimmick. I would put that. I like games that have a gimmick to it.
Oh, as a game mechanic, yeah.
Yeah, because the Betrayal of the House of the Hill, the gimmick to that game is there's a haunting phase where somebody is a betrayer. Yep. And it's random depending on what happened throughout the game. And that's a gimmick.
Sure.
But I really like it. And you'll see the rest of these games, there's definitely a gimmick to it for the most part. But for those who don't know, Betrayal of the House of the Hill is this game where we're all the adventurers. We don't know what happened. We're exploring this mansion that seems to be something's weird happening because there's weird stuff coming out. There's some weird stuff.
There's some weird stuff.
And at some point, depending on how we roll, there's a haunting that happens, which initiates the second half of the game. And depending on which haunting came out, because it's modular as you explore. There's haunting on some of the tiles. Depending on which tile triggers the haunting at the end, and who it is and where it's at, because some of the ones can be upstairs, main floor, and basement, or combinations of which, will determine in this big table in the what the betrayer is.
Right.
It could be the person who placed it. Could be the person to the right, to left, or whatever. And there's a whole book just for the betrayer and one for the good guys.
The heroes, yeah.
And so the betrayer is supposed to go off, read it. The other people are supposed to read it together and talk, and then you get back together. And you don't know what the other team knows. Like, you know what you need to do, and the good guys know what they need to do, but they don't know what each other knows and what information and what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's really fun, and it's just off the wall bonkers on some of those, but like those scenarios. And from what I've read, the expansion, which I did pick up, it gets even crazier.
It does. It adds a bunch more.
So it's just a fun game. I really like it. A lot of fun. It's not like super heavy really either.
No, not really.
Surprisingly. Surprising, but yeah, not heavy whatsoever, but a lot of fun.
Yes, I agree with you.
So that was my number 7, Betrayal of the House of the Hill. Number 6.
My number 6 is a classic game of mine. First came out in 1986 and was just...
Oh, gosh.
Yes. First, another edition, or like the 5th or 6th edition of it or something like that, came out 2016. It is Blood Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Fantasy miniatures tabletop board game where it's high fantasy and football melds together. Orcs and dwarves and, you know, halflings and all this undead and all these things. And you can make teams. And basically, you're playing a football game. It's two halves of 8 turns each, and it's very awesome. I grew up playing. It's from Games Workshop, which is very into the very miniatures game, but they've put out some board games with it over the years. And this is something that it's just as a cult classic, and it died off about 10, 15 years ago. And there's just been a fan following that has played this over the years and continued on with the rules and things. And so Games Workshop came out with a new edition in 2016 and brought it back and in full force. And I just love this. I've introduced this to the boys. We've got multiple, when I say multiple, probably 12 or 15 of the 20-some teams that are out there.
Wow.
Yeah. And we're painting the miniatures. Of course, Gabe's getting into the painting. So we've got all these figures, and we've got his Skaven team, which is a rat team, and all this. And it's just brutal combat football field.
Like,
and
people die.
Oh, yes, you kill players. There's a lot of luck in it. There's dice rolls, and you go in with this. There's a lot of luck, and that's part of the whole flavor. They're so thematic with Nuffle, and the history of this. Nuffle is the god of the Blood Bowl, which actually it is the old former National Football League, and they play off of a lot of this American football theme. It is very funny.
There's a lot of nods to it.
Yes, it is, very much. I just love this game, and I've played it for years. I grew up with a boy's age now when I was getting into the teams, and just brings back a lot of memories. We play it often. They came out with another subsidiary game, a re-implement called Blitz Bowl, and which is smaller.
Right?
It's smaller. You can get a game into an hour, where these games are about 2 hours.
Yeah, they're long.
So, yes, yeah. So it's, anyway, love this. Very, very, very fun game for mine. It's one of my top games.
So Justin, if you want to try this,
yes,
go on Steam.
Yes.
There's the Blood Bowl video game, and it takes a lot of the craziness of like trying to...
There's tables and numbers and yes.
Whenever you do any action, there's some kind of stupid table you have to look at and roll.
Yep.
And heck, you could be like on a runaway for the goal and you have to roll to get into the end zone and like...
Because you're sprinting. Yeah, you're pressing your luck. You're going for it.
You could like... fall and kill yourself essentially if you roll against your armor. Like, oh my gosh.
And if you break your armor, if you're a goblin, you're squishy, you break your armor, you can get an injury. Anyway.
So there's so much roll. The game automates it, makes it a lot easier. So I would suggest the start there because it's a big investment of time and stuff, but it is a fun little game to pull out and play against the computer because you can just do crazy stuff. Yeah,
it's fun. It's high fantasy.
You can like cheat and stuff. Anyway.
It's a fun game. And you beat on each other.
It's funny.
That's Blood Bowl.
Yeah, that was your number...
That was six.
Okay. All right, my number six is Western Legends. This also was Chris's number seven, right?
Yes, this was my number seven.
So we actually did a game review on this early on. I think it was like episode three or something like that.
One of the first few.
Maybe don't go back. All those episodes are a little awkward. We're still trying to get our
Still feet. Working on it. But, we're getting better, I think.
Hopefully it's better.
We got sound effects and stuff now.
Yeah, I hope it's better. But if you didn't catch it or don't want to go back and listen, I don't blame you whatsoever. If the statistics say anything, people aren't going back past the first episode they listen to it and then like, okay. So anyway, Western Legends is a sandbox Western game. And for those who are not familiar maybe with the term sandbox, like those who play video games and stuff, basically it gives you mechanics and a world to play in. And there's really up to you what you do. So you kind of take on a role of a... heck, you could be a bad guy too, but a cowboy essentially, and you can be wrestling cattle, or I mean, you play poker. I don't even remember everything you can do. You can go fight bandits, and you can go mine. You can mine, or you could steal from the bank, steal from others. You could go steal cattle. There's so many things you could do. You could be a sheriff or not be a sheriff. And
you can go to the law, like you said, or be a criminal. It's a very open format of how the direction that you want to go, take the path of your cowboy.
Very thematic.
Or cowgirl.
Yeah, there are some.
Yeah, there are.
Very thematic.
Oh, very much. That's what I love about this game.
It's so much fun, though. It is so much fun. Just to, you know, 1 minute you're turning gold into the bank to get victory points, and the next minute you're robbing
the bank
if you wanted to.
Exactly.
Or Chris is coming back from the mines with a full gold pouch, and I hold him up and steal from him. You know,
that was horrible.
I still lost, but it was a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh, it's a lot of fun.
It's probably one of the only games I could think of where I lost. Fairly bad, actually, and I had so much fun doing it.
It is a game that you can lose, but you're just the actions of it. And you're talking stories and telling that this. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, it's a fabulous game. Love it. Love the theme.
Oh, so good. And there's expansion coming out.
I've ordered that. I'm looking for that.
Get that. We're playing.
Oh, I know. It's supposed to be here in November.
Woohoo!
Yes, over Christmas break. Yeah,
so good.
Yeah.
So that was Western Legend. That was my number six. And Chris,
my number seven.
Number seven.
Number five. My number five. Big Trouble in Little China, the game. Oh my gosh. This is from Everything Epic and 2018 game. I got the deluxe edition from them and pre-ordered this and saw them at Gen Con last year and stuff and went over to the booth. And this is a game with, oh my gosh, Jack Burton, Pork Chop Express, going in Little China. just the whole thematic of that movie. That is one of my most favorite epic movies of all time, is Big Trouble in Little China.
So you're saying this may or may not have influenced your decision? Oh my gosh,
absolutely it did. And this game brings the theme of the movie into play, where you're going against Lo Pan and working your way through and getting, you know, Gracie Liu and everybody else, the Cass Chang and all this stuff, and getting them together and going into the Little China and getting there and working your way up and fighting the bosses and the foot soldiers and getting to Lo Pan and having that epic battle in the end. Oh my gosh, I just love this game. When this movie came out years ago, and it was one of my just favorite movies, and then I heard this game was coming out, and I was checking it out. Saw them online, looked at everything, and then just did it. Was at Gen Con and just pre-ordered it. I'm like, I got to get this. And just, oh, gosh. So I actually got the expansion for the Lo Pan expansion came out. I haven't messed with that or played with anything, but this is one we're going to sit down and we're going to play,
yeah,
and we're going to do a review.
I
know
I'll
you're not.
I
yes,
just don't.
This
like
is not your game.
That movie,
I love it. Ugh. Oh, so, and this game just grabs the theme and everything of the movie, brings it all together in one big, huge. Of course, mine was golden. I got the golden box, the deluxe edition. Yeah. I like, you know, go big or go home. I like the deluxe stuff. So, anyway, if you love that genre, love that movie, check it out. Big Trouble in Little China, the game.
Nice. Well, my number five, this might be a little surprising, is Gloomhaven. And I say surprising because it's not higher on
That's
those.
What I was wondering. I thought it would be.
It's definitely slipped. Like, ooh. And I think part of that is just we haven't played in a while. We need to finish it up. But because I remember every time we played it, I just walked away being like, oh, this is so good. And it is good. It is a lot of fun. It definitely reinvents the dungeon crawling experience. And for those who don't know, Gloomhaven is just this ginormous box. I mean, it is ginormous. I'm not kidding. This thing is big.
And heavy.
And it was a Kickstarter. It's like really what kicked off Isaac Childress, the developer, his kind of career. And it's a kind of a legacy campaign style, because you're supposed to mark up and put stickers on cards. And Chris hates it, so I get out the I was just doing it with a pencil, and he was hating it, so I got a Sharpie out last time it. It was hilarious.
I hate damaging game pieces and everything. It's legacy systems.
Yeah.
But
the cool thing about this game is in the box, it comes with, I don't know, like 12 sealed characters. So in all these boxes are these miniatures.
You had me at minis.
Thank you, Corey. And these miniatures, you don't know what they are. They just have a symbol on the box. And as you progress through the game, you have your, like, secret... Well, it's not really secret. Well, yeah, it is secret. But your agenda, like what you're trying to fulfill, that you get randomly at the game. And once you succeed it, your character has succeeded, you know, in life, and he retires. Because you're a bunch of mercenaries. Well, when you do that, it unlocks one of those new characters in the box that you can pull out. And like, really, why that's exciting is that every character isn't your prototypical, like, it's fantasy, but it's not your prototypical fantasy characters. Like, really unique characters that it's not, oh, he's a magic dude, or, oh, he's a fighter. No, it, like, mixes and blends these. Like, you have a fighter guy that's summoning nature around him, and he's pounding on guys, and shock waves are coming down, or I'm like this half robot person who can heal, and I can send out pets, and I'm attacking with magic, and I can even hit like with really well, and there's no dice rolling, which is really like two. All your cards have a top and bottom action, and you pick two cards. Everybody picks two cards, and then you display them. And when your turn activates based off of the number on the cards, then you pick a bottom and a top action, which is really cool. There's no dice rolling. Whatever you get is whatever you hit. There's a special modifier deck that you can upgrade to really make it high modifier, and that's what I really like. When you level up, you can like update your modifier deck, your your power cards, you can upgrade them and make them better and customize this character. And it's just so much fun. And there's a campaign and storyline. I mean, the book comes with like 99 scenarios. And it's almost a little choose your own adventure where there's some you can't even hit depending on the choices you make. So it's a long trog. We've made it through like the first major story arc plus a few extra scenarios. And we're starting on the second scenario, and we haven't played in like over a year, but we definitely need to get that to the table some more so we can finish up that campaign, because I do have the expansion up there now.
I saw that still
sealed. It came out, and I'm like, I gotta get it. But yeah, that was Gloomhaven, a lot of fun. Check it out. It's a hard game to try to probably play, because not only is it expensive barrier, but kind of a legacy campaign, so it's hard to jump into somebody's game. Right. But there are rules to the game to do that, so I highly recommend it if you get a chance to play it. So that's Gloomhaven, number four.
My number four is higher up on Brian's list, so we'll visit it then.
And let's be honest, it should be higher because that's such a good game. But that's a little tease.
It is.
All right, my number four. This is higher on Chris's list too. We'll get there.
Number three. My number three was Brian's number four, and this is Scythe.
Oh, yes, Scythe.
Yes.
So good.
2016 game.
By Stonemaier
Games. Stonemaier Games, exactly. And, oh, my gosh, I played this first time at Origins.
Which is so crazy. Another game that's on our top 10 list that one of us played for the first time.
And this is one of my, this type of game is right up my alley.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Dudes on a map, victory points, battling, resource management, area control. Just
and there's tons of ways, tons of strategies.
I mean, you can think like Risk on steroids, but 100 times better.
And you can upgrade your actions and like variable faction powers.
Yes, there's variable factions.
And even the board's variable, where each starting area is just so different. It dictates the path you have to take because the resources you get.
Yeah, it comes with miniatures and
you have like a mech and a hero character, which is really cool, and you get workers and
I really, really, really love this game. We played it that first time in Hall, and it's a 2-hour game, and oh my gosh, it's wanted to play it again once we got done. I'm like, oh, because I screwed up big time. on some of the strategies, and you played it before I did, and so when we did it, I was like, oh, and I really wanted to go back and correct it, and oh, just a lot of fun.
Is that a 2-hour game?
Pretty sure.
115 minutes.
Yeah, that's 5 minutes short of 2 hours.
For those that are here, that was it's 1 hour 15 minutes, so I would hate to do an apology video next.
It did not include the 5 minutes of setup.
How dare. Oh, more than five minutes. Holy cow.
It's like a half an hour setup.
And so we haven't played the expansions, and I've heard the expansions are really good, especially the Rise of Fenris.
Yes, it's more of a campaign, isn't it?
It adds a campaign. Yeah. It's not legacy, but it adds campaign. I've heard a lot of good things. I was going to tell you, I saw Jamie Stigmeier. He was posting something on Instagram. They have metal mechs.
No.
Yeah. For a limited. Sweet. Guess how much they are?
$50 each. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
No, for the whole set.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But because every mech is different, customized for each faction.
For each faction.
Yeah. So, and I believe one of the expansions adds another faction and a bigger board. And that's the other thing. There's other boards. At Gen Con this year, they came out with a modular board. Oh. So you can play the game in a modular fashion. So there's a lot of different flavors to this game that I really want to get into. It is a little of a price investment. It's a pricey game, but the components are so good. The gameplay is so good. And the artwork on this game, oh my word, the artwork is phenomenal. Like,
but yeah, I picked it out on a Half Price Books sale.
They're having their weekend sale, By the way,
50% off. And
Labor Day
that.
Sale right now, 20% off everything.
What? Oh, nice.
Everything. Not just one game, everything.
Nice.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up.
No, that's all right.
You got it for a great price. I think it retails for like $60 or $70. Right. I think I picked this up for $40, and I think that was about the price you picked it up.
Yep, it was under $30. It was $30-some.
Worth every single penny. Oh, so good.
Yep. Very good game. Scythe.
The digital version of Scythe is out there for Steam.
Oh, yeah.
So good. That. So good. Like, the music they added to it is really good, and the gameplay just plays just as well, and you can play online and single player. Really good. I highly recommend it. It's a cheaper way to get into the game and try to play it, see if you like it. And it's actually done really well. So that was Scythe. My cool. number four, Chris's number three. All right, my number three is Star Wars Rebellion, a.k.a. Star Wars in a Box. Star Wars Rebellion is a two-player game. Now, they say don't let you fool you. It says four players on the box, but don't. It's not a four-player game. You basically play two and two, and you have to, like, share. It's dumb. Two-player game. It's like a three-hour game, though. But it is the classic Star Wars trilogy in a box. So how the game works is one side's the Empire, one side's the Rebellion. The Rebellion picks their planet to be their hidden base. So think like basically Yavin or Hoth, right, in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
It was Yavin 4, by the way, in the original trilogy. Think that where the Empire, you know, in A New Hope, the Empire's trying to track down the Rebellion and squash the Rebellion, right? That's the storyline. Well, that's what this game is. You're the Rebellion. You have a hidden planet. And how the Empire wins is they have to find your planet and kill your base, blow it up, before the Rebellion can rebellion across the universe. So there's a turn tracker. And as the turn tracker goes, there's a Rebellion thing where I can make, you know, the Rebellion marker that I can make. And when those two meet, the turn marker and my Rebellion marker that I'm trying to progress, meet, the Rebellion wins. So you're basically, as a Rebellion, just trying to hold out and keep your base secret while the Empire's just, like, storming this galaxy and trying to find the Rebellion base. So it has really neat mechanics because every planet that's in the game is this small deck of cards. Well, when you pick your planet, that card goes out. And so the Empire has special abilities to try to uncover those cards because they get a card every turn to start narrowing down. And so they're trying to narrow down, and you're trying to sow all these things, and you have heroes that you're trying to recruit, and then you use those heroes on your turn. You have so many heroes, and you basically send them out in missions to accomplish certain things based off your cards. Same with the Empire, and that's how you get those special abilities like the Rebellion, sowing Rebellion to move that track up. If you're the Empire, you can do stuff like build a Death Star. You can blow up planets.
Well, yeah.
You can, as the Emperor, you can convert any one of the Rebellion players to the dark side.
Yeah.
So when Corey and I played this the first time we played it, he turned Han to the dark side. So the whole rest of the game, he had an extra hero, Han, playing for the dark side. So each hero has their special attributes, which adds to the card requirements and what you can do. It's just so much fun. The Empire starts with a huge armada, a superstar destroyers and all this stuff. The Rebellion has like a couple Corvettes and a few like X-Wing. And that's it. Like Y-Fighters, Air A-Fighters. Right?
A-Wing, Y-Wing?
A-Wings, yeah. And yeah. A-Wings, X-Fighters and A-Wings. And throughout the game, you can try to start building up your armada, but even your biggest ship does not even, like, touch the Super Star Destroyer. But you can try to blow up, like, the Death Star and stuff. It's just so much fun. It is Star Wars, and you can make... You basically play through A New Hope, and you just make it your own game every time you play. So, one caveat, the battle in the game is the worst part. It's just some random, like, you pull cards, and it's like, mine beats yours, and it's really terrible. There's an expansion which adds the Rogue One heroes. Well, don't worry about that. Don't put those in the game, because that just... I'm putting Rogue One characters into New Hope is just, like, that's dumb. But... They have a new battle system. Take the battle cards, throw the expansion away, keep the battle cards and play with that, and that makes the game 100 times better. So, anyway, that was 4 minutes on Star Wars Rebellion, but great game. Chris, this is one of the games that if you played, I think it would jump to your top five instantly.
This is a game that's on my list to get. It is one that I've heard so much about. Mm-hmm. If you're a Star Wars fanboy I am, oh my gosh.
But it's a 3-hour game, though.
I love 3-hour games.
The board itself two full-size boards put together. On my length of a six-foot table, it takes up 4 feet of it. That's how big this board is. It's huge, and there's like 50 planets on it. And it's
luckily,
so
I
good.
Have a big dining room table.
It would fill the whole thing, and it's glorious the whole time. Yes. So we got to play this.
Yes,
just
the boys
so
would
fun.
Love it. We got to pull it out.
Just the stories. Yes. It just makes it. So anyway, Star Wars Rebellion, my number three.
Nice. Number two. My number two is a 2015 game by Simon, Blood Rage. Another Viking game. A glorious
Thanks, Corey.
Oh my gosh. Glorious epic battles of trying to get to Valhalla. This game is packed full of fabulous miniatures. I mean, Simon is known for their miniatures in their board games. And they just shows that they've got the stuff right.
Oh, man, game. This game is so good. I'm not sure why it's not in my top. I know. It is really good. I've only played it once. That's probably why. Right. And you kicked our butts, but good. It is really good.
It is really good. I love everything about it. The board, I mean, everybody has, there's different factions, and you go recruit these monsters.
Area control.
There's battle in it. There's various ways for win conditions. You got to get your victory points over there's three phases of it before Ragnarok, the end of the world. Yes.
Yeah.
Ragnarok comes and oh my gosh, there's so many different ways to take your strategy and how to win this. The last time we played it, I had all these Loki cards and I was throwing my weak soldiers at them and they were killing me, and I was going up to Valhalla. And I had these extra victory points because my soldiers died and went to Valhalla. And, oh, it was so awesome. Yeah. I'd play all these Loki cards where I would die in battle, and I would get my soldiers back, and I get victory points and all this.
It was ridiculous.
It was fun. And it took you guys a while to figure out what the heck I was doing.
Well, I mean, we kind of figured it out, but we were, like, to take one of those cards was really prohibitive to us. So, those who don't know, there's card drafting.
It's a pick and pass.
Yeah, it's a card draft, a classic card drafting where you pick what card and pass it. And so, many other cards that we needed that go into what we need to do, or by we, Corey and I, and we were talking about this playthrough. And so, it's like, I don't want to take this because this would be, or there's a couple times there's like three in our hands. Like, well, even if I take it, Chris is going to still get one. Yeah. So what are you going to do? But yeah, it's a great game. There's a lot of symmetry to it. Those hero other monsters you can recruit, like Fenris and all those other ones, really add to the game. It's really cool.
It really is. And they came out with another expansion, and the digital version, which I did back on Kickstarter, and the sixth clan. And more figures and stuff, so I should be getting that later on this year.
Cool.
But this is just a favorite game of mine. I love the Viking mythos and just culture and everything in it.
Probably one of Eric Lane's best game. I mean, Eric Lane has so many good games, but this is probably one of his best ones.
And it spurred a lot with the
absolutely
the, yes.
And I heard Rising Sun's just as good.
I've heard that too. And then the new Ancus. There's a new. They announced it at Gen Con. The third in this trilogy of type of games.
It looks really cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I haven't. Yeah.
But I mean, they haven't shown a whole lot. But they're still in development with it. But yeah.
But he's done some very good job, and it kicked off with this Blood Rage, and very very good game.
Yeah, great game. My number two is War of the Ring. This was also Chris's number four that I was given a hard time that it should. Like Star Wars Rebellion, it is Lord of the Rings in the box. I know we talked about this a little bit of What's on Your Tail or a Love, maybe a few episodes.
Yep,
maybe like
played
five
it. You and Corey played it.
Man, so good. Yeah. It is. It basically picks up right when the Fellowship joins together and Rivendell.
Yes.
Right? Or Dell. Yes.
Something like that. Just roll with it.
Yeah. It goes back to that whole Dale thing. Yeah. Anyway, Rivendell. The heroes are supposed to, or the free people are trying to throw the ring into Mount Doom before the ring bearer gets corrupted, or they can try to control so many strongholds while the enemy player gets a buttload of bad guys, like tons of bad guys. Just kind of like Star Wars Rebellion. It's definitely asymmetrical, and they're trying to try to find the ring bearer and corrupt him, and that's how you win the game, or you can have so many strongholds. So really fun game, so thematic. I mean, so thematic. It feels like it feels like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
the movie, like the book or whatever. It
Which
is
I
so
love.
Good. Oh yeah, I mean, it's hard not to love Lord of the Rings, but it is so much fun. It's dudes on the map with, I think there's like 200 little miniatures that come in the game.
There is.
Oh yeah, it's so much fun.
And I have the second edition and then the two expansions for that.
Oh, you have the expansions?
Yes.
Oh, we got to play this
yes.
game, man.
Yeah, I've never played the first edition. I have the second edition
We
stuff.
Should have like an epic gaming Saturday or something where we play Star Wars Rebellion and then War of the Ring, and it just is this epic long day. It'd be a trot.
It would be
a trudge, but it'd be so much fun.
We'd have to push through it. It's for the podcast. For the children. We'll do it for the children.
It's for the kids. Think of the kids.
Yes, exactly.
So that's War of the Ring, my number two, and Chris's number four. And the moment everybody, well, not really, but everybody's been waiting for, our number one. Chris, you want to go ahead and start off with our number one?
My number one is an epic game of galactic conquest. It's trying to become the emperor of the universe. It is a 2017, this is the fourth edition, from Christian Peters of Fantasy Flight Games. Drumroll. Twilight Imperium 4.
What?
Yeah.
Of course, it's TI4.
I love this game. I first got introduced with TI3. And then Twilight Imperium came out 2 years ago, and I bought this. Oh, my gosh.
It was a surprise, too. Yeah. We were, like, sitting there in the Fantasy Flight thing, and they're like, and TI4 is coming out, and you can go buy it now. And it's like, what? Nobody knew. And what did Chris do? He bought it.
I bought it. Oh, I love this game. This is a game we get out about once a year, and I'm setting it up September this next month. Setting it up. We'll figure it out. We're going to get our schedules where you got an away game that you're not going to.
We
got to
play this.
And
this is a bucket list game for me.
This
is the granddaddy of board games. Yes. I mean, this is the Goliath, the Mount Everest. That's what I feel like. Ever since I got into the board gaming hobby, TI3, obviously at the time, was the granddaddy, the biggest, most popular game. But it takes like forever to play, and it's so complicated, but so epic. Ever since then, it's been on my. It's definitely been on my bucket list.
Yep. When we played, the last time we played TI3, it was 13 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And so we started at Saturday at noon and got done at Sunday at 3 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
So the next time, that was a full 8-player. So,
and it's not supposed to take that long, right?
Well, no. There's analysis paralysis in
Scott.
This. And,
yeah.
Scott.
Excuse me.
Scott.
Sorry.
I'll
cut
call
that
out there. No, there can be some analysis paralysis, and there's downtime between turns and stuff. And so when you have 8 players, that's a big, epic galaxy. And so it does add the times. But the new version TI4 only plays up to 6. So sorry, 2 people aren't getting invited this time until they come out with an expansion. But so we'll play a big 6-player, and it's just so much fun. There's political intrigue and assassinations,
backstabbing.
Oh my gosh, it's backstabbing,
and then just huge fights,
just epic. And... yeah, there's 17 different races that have different abilities, and some are a warring faction, some are science, some are political. There's different tracks that you can go to evolve. Down and your warships, you can get this technology, your bases and your this kind of stuff, and you go out to conquer planets and gain their resources. Then you get political intrigue within the Senate, and oh my gosh, it's an epic fun game.
All right, my number one is a game that actually is out of print, so I feel bad putting this my number
one,
but it's out of print, recently out of print. And it's off of actually a TV show. So you think, hey, IP, these can't be good.
Oh.
But this is probably the best game off of IP. And for those who don't know, it's Battlestar Galactica, the board game. Actually, I think it's called the board game.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica, the board game. I have the base game and the expansions. Now, This game's a love for me. So yeah. There are problems with this game. I'll admit that. There's problems with certain player counts just do not play well with this game. The expansions, for the most part, play terribly. But for the veterans out there who've played Battlestar Galactica, you know, you only include certain things from certain expansions. And so I know that sounds terrible. If this is any other game, I'd just be blasting it. Like, well, you have to put all the stuff together and make all these home. It's not really home rules. It says you can do that and yeah. throw all the stuff. But that you have to do that to make the game really good. And it's only good at, like, one player count. I think it's 5 players is the perfect player count. 6 is terrible. 4 is terrible. You have to play with 5. So I'm still setting this up as this sounds terrible. But if nobody's seen, this is based off of not the 70s Battlestar Galactica TV show. It's the one from the 2000s.
Right.
It's based off of that. And, I mean, the show is so good. It's, like, yeah. one of my ultimate favorite shows of all time. I love the show so much. It kind of reminds me of Lost, but it's in space, sci-fi. But essentially, for those who don't know Battlestar Galactica, let me take a little step back. Basically, there's these robots, right?
Cylons
that were created by humans, and they progressed, and there was a war between the Cylons and the humans. Then the Cylons basically left after the war. I think they lost.
Yeah, they got banished.
And then they disappeared and never heard back from, and there was like a treaty that was signed for like 80 or 100 years, never heard from the robots and Cylons, and everybody kind of forgot about it for the most part. Well, the Cylons returned back, and they're way more advanced. And it turns out the Cylons have been able to build people or other robot Cylons that look like people.
Synthesize.
Yeah, they look like real people. And so they go and attack and basically take over. They've been low-key taking over parts of Earth and the government and stuff. And they execute an attack and basically wipe off all the humans off the planet. And so the story brings up where you have this General Adama, who fought in the first war and was a hero to the people, right? And he's retiring, and he's on the old Battlestar Galactica, this old like ship.
Archaic.
In fact, they're like turning it into a museum.
Yes.
When the Cylons attack Earth. So the Battlestar Galactica takes off and escapes from Earth and rallies some civilians in space, and that's basically the remaining humans yep. in the universe. And so that's the storyline. As the Battlestar Galactica continues on, they find about these Cylons that are amongst the Battlestar fleet. Some of the Cylons don't even know they're Cylons. They're sleeper agents. Cylons.
Yeah.
And so there's like political intrigue because there's whole politics versus like military. There's all these military. There's all this drama. It is such a good TV show. Like, go back and watch it. This board game encapsulates that perfectly. The whole game, like, you start out and there's Cylons like surrounded in the Battlestar Galactica. And after every person's turn, you there's a crisis card. And every crisis card, it feels like after you resolve it, like, how are we not going to blow up, right? Like, how are we going to do this every single turn? And the whole point is to try to jump so many times and get to new, like, basically new Earth, like discover a new Earth, like the chosen land.
Yep.
Again, there's some lore to it. The thing is there's Cylons on board. And there's human players at your table that are low-key Cylons. Now, they're sleeper Cylons, too. So everybody could get human at the beginning and then become sleeper Cylons. They get revealed to be a Cylon. But you don't know. You don't know at the beginning of the game if they're Cylons, or at the second half, you know for sure they're Cylons, but you don't know who. And there's cool resolving mechanics where you place cards and there's certain colors. Well, depending on your character from the game, which, or from the TV show, yep. has certain attributes. So like a pilot gets pilot cards, ability cards, and the engineer gets engineering and some command, and there's some crossover with the colors. And so there's skill checks throughout the whole game as these crisis cards come up, and it'd be like, hey, there's a crisis, you have to have 8+, resolve it. Well, to pass it, you have to have blue and, say, green. Blue and green, pass it. And so everybody puts cards out. They can do 0, 1, 2, 3, however many they want to. Everything gets shuffled up, and then there's a deck there's two cards that come from the deck random. We don't know what it is. Get shuffled up and you reveal it. Any of the ones that go to the skill check, you add up the values. And then anything that isn't goes against it. Well, if you use a Cylon, you can start low-key tanking it. Well, the deck played those two cards. You don't know.
Or someone else.
Or three or four cards show up and you're like, well, somebody definitely is a Cylon. We don't know it is. And it's so much fun. There's like somebody's the commander. There's the president and they all have special abilities. There's pilots and you can throw people in the brig, or if you're playing the expansion, which I suggest you do, you throw them out the airlock and kill them. It's just so much fun. A little gimmicky, but it's so stressful the whole time you're playing. It's like a 2-hour game, and it is just so much fun. You backstabbing, and it just so good. I could go on about it, but definitely my favorite game. Because when I was sitting down, I was thinking, and we can wrap up our list, but when I was sitting down and trying to narrow this down, it was really hard. But I went through my shelves and kind of listed out the games I really like, these are games I'd play right now. So yes. I listed out, I think I had like 20 or so. And then I started narrowing down and be like, if I could play any of these games right now, it doesn't matter how many people or who or whatever, these are the games. So I got 11, and then I had to narrow it down from there. And I'm just looking, what's going to be number one? And Battlestar Galactica is the game that I would like to play over every single one of those games on this list, because I just love it so much and have so many good experiences with it and memories. And I love the TV show and love the game. It's just, it's so good. So
that's awesome when they can do something like that. And unfortunately, this is a game I never picked up. And
have you played it?
Yeah. Oh, numerous times with you even. Yeah. Over at Corey's and we played it. We played it several times. Yeah. No. So this is something.
Corey's always a fracking silent.
Yeah. And he's the one who usually hosts it and playing this game. So, but it's unfortunately, I never did pick it up and I kept putting it off. And unfortunately, So I'm hoping they do reprint this. And
it's Fantasy Flight. You never know. But I think part of it's the IP. They lost the IP.
Right.
Sci-Fi Channel. I don't even know if they have rights to the game anymore. I don't know.
We don't know who, but it is a very good game. There's a lot of IP games out there that are bad,
yes.
But there are several, which we'll talk about later and stuff, that are fabulous, and this is one of those. So,
that's our top 7 Prime plus 1. So hard. That was a hard exercise.
It was
stressful. I mean, I left off games on here that I'm kind of really sad about, like The Reckoners, Terraforming Mars, Time Stories I left off. What were some of the ones you maybe made your top?
So there's some games that I put on my list that I haven't even played yet, so they didn't make my list. Star Wars Rebellion,
you can't put it on your list.
No, I know, but Root, Thunderstone Quest, Clank. I don't own Clank.
Is so good.
I don't own that, so hence why I didn't make my list. Oh, yeah, so there's... Yeah, those are just some games off the top of my head. This was a very challenging exercise.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though. Makes me want to play these games.
I know. It gets me excited. I'm going to go home, and you're going to see emails tomorrow going out for a TI4 date. Just tell me on that. Trust me. We're going to be getting that on, figuring out our calendars to get that in. Yeah.
All right. Well, cool. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. It's going a little wrong. That was a lot of fun. But that was our top 7 Prime plus 1.
Yeah.
We have to get our love and hate in here. Because, hey, we have it on every episode, but we came kind of long on the review. But, man, we talked about some really good games.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a quick love and hate here. So, love. I'm going to go ahead and start out.
Go right ahead.
I got two loves today. I got co-op games. We played Forbidden Sky, and I'm just like, every time I play a co-op game, a good co-op game, I'm always walking away, I'm like, oh, it's so much fun. Because co-op games, the tension is not playing against each other. The tension is like, it's hard. And that's what I really like. Does that make sense? Because most competitive games, the tension comes from trying to beat each other or, try to get to the finish line or try to get that many victory points first or finish it off. The tension from co-op games comes from the game being hard and just so many things going on. And so, like, those Forbidden games, it just feels like, how are we going to win? If you ever get that feeling, that's like a good co-op game.
Because
you should at some point just feel like, how are we going to do this? But somehow you come out by the skin of your teeth and it just feels good. So I really like good co-op games. Really liked Forbidden Sky. Second like is World of Warcraft Classic came out today. 15 years later after the vanilla regular World of Warcraft game. Yeah. World of Warcraft's been out for 15 years.
Yeah, I played that.
You
did? The original.
Did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. Basically, my freshman year of college. It came out my senior year of high school. 2004.
Okay, I was going to say, because, yeah.
Yeah, it came out in the later half of 2004. So I remember we had LAN parties. Remember good old LAN parties? So we were having a LAN party. One of the guys was, like, playing World of Warcraft. I'm like, what is this? Well, it's World of Warcraft. I'm like, this looks pretty cool. So, yeah, by the end of my senior year. So I didn't get in like from day one, but I got in within like 6 months. I was playing it in my freshman and sophomore year in college. Oh man, especially when I moved off campus. I didn't really have a whole lot of friends up there in Ames, Iowa State. And I had a roommate who was really active in like marching band at for the Cyclones. And so he wasn't really around a whole lot, and I would work at a restaurant, and I would work like 3-4 hours. Like, I could just work a few nights, and that was enough to pay for all my bills, because, you know, sure. Restaurant pays well. So all the rest of the time was playing World of Warcraft, essentially. And I that's when I started dating Emily, but she lived like 30, 40 minutes away from me, so we got to see each other maybe once or twice, maybe a week. All the rest of the time was World of Warcraft, baby. Jeez. Even through the summer, because we lived on campus that whole summer. So, because we had a whole year, because we were off campus. And that whole summer, I just worked and played World of Warcraft. Oh, man. I put so many hours raiding, you know, those 40-man raids.
Were you the orcs or the humans?
I was Alliance. Yep, I had a human paladin. Was
always
my first.
Always played the orcs.
Yeah, so good time. So, and man, it is so good. It still holds up. Because a lot of people are really like, everybody's going to go back and realize how much it sucks because everybody forgets because of the nostalgia. No, it is that good. It is that much fun. And I'm loving it. Loving it.
I actually played Warcraft, not World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
The very first game.
Oh, yeah, I played Warcraft, too. Yes. Yeah, Orcs and Humans.
Yes, Orcs and Humans.
You had to build roads to connect to all. Oh, man, that was a pain in the butt. Warcraft 2 was so good in the expansion, and Warcraft 3 is really, really good. Did you know they're remaking Warcraft 3?
No.
Yeah.
Nice. I'd love to pick that up and play that again.
Yeah, it's supposed to be coming out this next year, I believe. They're revamping it. So try it out. If you played World of Warcraft back in the days, it's just as good. It isn't just your nostalgia. It is that good. Yeah, there's some things that's not easy to use as it is in the next WoW, but that actually makes it challenging and actually makes it very rewarding. Every single one of those levels, it feels so good and it feels rewarding. I don't know. So anyway.
Fun.
Yes, that was my love.
My love is high fantasy themes. I'm a very thematic person in my games. I like the immersion. Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I just love the high fantasy, the Lord of the Rings, the Dungeons and Dragons, the elves, the dwarves, you know, against the orcs and dragons, and just that whole theme and that just the lore that goes along with all of that stuff. And I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, grew up reading the books when I was young and following all that, and J.R.R. Tolkien, and just loved everything about that. That theme just grabs me. I mean, you make a good game and you throw something, you know, with that in it, and I'll just eat that up.
Yeah, good stuff.
I just love that.
Well, I think we have a shared hate this week. So at the dealt hand, we had like a little time left. Let's play this little filler game that we saw at Gen Con. That it looks really interesting. You have to admit, it looks interesting on the table. Because
I didn't really see it, but yes,
because there's a 3D like
orb with a hexagon sides.
And it looks really interesting as you're putting like magnetic pieces and building like a planet. The name of the game is Planet by Blue Orange. And it looked really interesting until you play it. I think we both didn't really like it. Now, you were like griping about it. I was at least trying to give it a chance, but like 3 turns into it, you're just grumpy about it.
I mean, it's seriously, you've got these hexagon tiles that are magnets, and they go on the orb, which is your planet, and I'm trying to figure out the strategies involved and how this works and, you know, where you place it. You gotta I just didn't enjoy it. And
well, I mean, so there's these cards. So all the magnet things are in piles of 5. So the 4 of us do it, and there's an extra one. The extra one goes in there. And then there's cards that get tiered out, and the cards give you scoring, right? And so it'll be like whoever has the most of trees that at least a contiguous area across the orb that touch water, let's say, then you get that card right out of the players. But there might be the most trees that don't touch water. So I mean, you're never going to be able to build your planet to get every card. And so the idea is you kind of look ahead, you have your secret objective, which says, hey, get the most of this this tile type, like mountain or water or ice or trees. And so that's what you're working for, where you're going to get most of your victory points, actually. And so you're trying to use that in conjunction with the other ones. But the other ones that you get where the habitat matches your gold card, you only get 1 point per those cards. But somehow you pull off getting one of those cards that isn't, let's say, mountains, then you get 2 points for those cards. So you're not going to be able to get all the cards. I think the idea here is you kind of look ahead. I mean, it's drafting too. And so sometimes you don't have a choice, to be completely honest. You just have to grab one and make the best of it. And you kind of have to look ahead at the cards. You can't really look at everybody else's orbs because it's 3D. Yeah. And they're not going to show you. And
you're not going to memorize it.
No, you're not. So, I mean, I can understand with the strategy. I just felt like there was
the strategy,
zero strategy. It was
no
just
strategy.
You just got lucky. It Absolutely. Just came down actually sometimes lucky, because sometimes you just place and you're like, I don't know. And then it turns out, oh, hey, that actually worked in my favor. And there's so many cards up front. You can't sit here and look through every card, because there's some that are a direct contradiction to each other. So it's not even like, I don't know. It was weird. It's just, I didn't know what the point of it. It just felt like, hey, let's slap on some magnet tiles and see who gets
exactly.
the best.
And it's one of the things, when you get to the end and you tally up the points and you find out you win, which I did, and I had no clue how I won and the strategy involved in winning that game, to me that's like, that's not a fun game. And I mean, you get to the end and you're like, hey, oh, Chris, you have the most victory points. You win. And I'm like, what? And it was just... I did not like that game. It's not my cup of tea.
Yeah, it was okay. It kind of I think Blue Orange was like, we're gonna take what like is good with King Domino, where you're trying to have the different terrains, right, and build contiguous, but we're gonna take away the whole point thing, throw it on an orb, and then we'll just throw out these random habitats and try to get points from it. It just felt kind of slapped together, where it's one of those where there's a gimmick, which is the orb that looks really cool.
Magnetic orb.
And then they tried to build stuff around it, and it just didn't execute very well. So
the thing about the orb, it may look cool, but you set it on the ground, or you may drop it or whatever.
Well, no, it's just you drop it. I mean, Jamie and Emily multiple times dropped it, and they were dropped it. I never lost any.
No, I didn't either, but the cubes come off, then all of a sudden you don't know how they reattach
which makes a big difference
in
the game.
Oh, it makes a huge difference in the game.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that Emily...
So don't play with people who drop stuff. No, I'm joking. Or just don't play it. Sorry, Blue Orange. Yeah. I like your other games, but man, this was a, swing and a miss.
Yeah, to me, it's strike three.
Which is too bad. So you're out. Anyway, that was Planet.
Yes.
Which is the name of it, by Blue Orange Games.
That's my hate, too.
Yeah. What are you going to do? All right, that was our love and hate this week. All right, well, that was a really long episode, Chris. A lot of time talking, so we're just going to... Not much more to say. It was a fun episode. Talked about a lot of games today, and one not so good game.
Yeah.
what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Not play it.
Yeah. So we'll be back to our normal format next week. Talking about, we'll still do games on our table, love and hate. We'll throw in a game review and talk about some other games. Maybe a game of yesteryear, or a game you should try. Maybe throw a bunch of smaller segments in next week. Mix it up a little bit.
Maybe you get to a game mechanic sometime.
Maybe.
And not get it cut out.
Or we just throw it in our expansion one of these days.
Exactly. We'll get to one of those.
Yeah, had a lot of fun. That was a hard exercise. You see these other people do top lists, and you're like, I could do that. Well, yeah, you can, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
Sit down and try it yourself. Actually, that's a cool exercise. Sit down and try picking out these games and try narrowing it down to seven.
When you do that, email us. Send us at gameswepleypod@gmail.com. Let us know what your top seven prime. Well, you can do a plus one, too. And let us know what those are. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd like to hear what our listeners' favorite games are.
Absolutely.
But it's a hard exercise. And actually kind of energized me to want to play some of these games more. It's like, I haven't played that in a while. And that is really good. So anything else you want to add, Chris, before we wrap up this episode?
No, just anything you can do to energize yourself and get out and play more games. I'm a big fan of that. So hopefully that's what this episode maybe is done, introduce you to some new games, and maybe get you excited about playing some others.
Absolutely. So. And you know what? Doing this, I can see the kind of games I like, and it just kind of reinforces and reminds you of what you like. And so when new games, you're looking at new games, kickstarts, you're looking at the new releases, or even old games, and you start reading through, you're like, you know what? I kind of like that game. I think I really will like it. Sometimes, you know, you don't want to spend $60 and hate it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. No, that's true. I found out I'm a big strategy thematic immersion and gregarious type game person. So,
what was that website? We'll just plug it. So, hey, you can try to do it. Maybe I'll do it for next episode. And we'll talk about what was the name of the website.
There is do a search called Quantic Foundry, Quantic Foundry, Foundry. Just Google that, and they have a board games motivation profile. There's also a video game one, but do the do the board game motivation profile. It's a series of questions. And what it does, it narrows it down and talks about different models of motivation clusters. And, I mean, these are by two PhD guys who developed this, and they're doing scientific research for board gamers and companies and researches and things. And it's really cool. It talks about getting into these different clusters of categories of motivation and talks, if you like, conflict, non-conflict, social manipulation, strategies, you know, discovery, immersions, aesthetics, things like that, social fun. Anyway, it gives you a profile at the end. And it gives you – there's a big questionnaire, answers some stuff, gives you a profile at the end. And kind of – then and also there's some tabs that says recommend games that if because you like this, here's – you know, what other people like
nice.
Games. Yeah.
I should do it and see if it matches
up. Yeah,
no.
We'll talk about it next week. Yeah, I was very high in high conflict strategy immersed in Gregorius type games.
Sounds about right.
So, yep, it is.
Sounds about right.
All
right. Well, that wraps up episode The Most Awesomest Games of All from The Games We Play. I am Brian.
And I'm Chris.
And keep on gaming. Join the conversation and feel free to give us your feedback. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Games We Play Pod. And that's gamesweplaypod@gmail.com.
My number two is a... he said number two.
So doo-doo.
So
sorry,
childish.
I am childish.
So childish.
You want to do that again so I cut that out?
Yeah.